Good morning and welcome to Simply Finance. It's Monday, April 15th. On today's show, financial markets are nervous amid Middle East tensions as the oil price falls, and Japan's finance chief announces that they will take all necessary steps amid the yen's fall. Plus, Japan's finance minister Suzuki says they are closely watching FX moves. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Finance. We start off with tensions running high in the Middle East after Iran launched a military strike on Israel over the weekend, rattling financial markets. Investors are worried this could lead to further escalation in the region. For more, let's bring in our correspondent. What's the latest on the situation, and how are markets reacting?
Markets are certainly on edge to start the week. Many Asia-Pacific stock indices fell into the red today, with Japan's Nikkei losing nearly 1% amid fears that open warfare could erupt between Iran and Israel. The oil price, which is sensitive to Middle East tensions, initially spiked to a six-month high near $92 per barrel on Friday, but it's pulled back slightly to around $90 this morning.
It sounds like there was a lot of uncertainty heading into the weekend about how severe Iran's attack and Israel's potential response would be. What do we know about the scale of the strike?
Iran fired over 300 drones and missiles at Israel on Saturday night in what was their first ever direct attack on Israeli territory. Fortunately, nearly all of them were intercepted by Israel's defense systems. An army base suffered minor damage, but there were no reported casualties. Importantly, Iran has said it considers the operation a success and won't take further action unless Israel retaliates.
And what signals are we getting from the Israeli side in terms of their response? It seems the markets are hoping cooler heads will prevail to avoid a dangerous cycle of escalation.
Right. The relatively limited damage is leading to some relief in the markets that a wider conflict can still be avoided at this stage. Israel says its forces remain on high alert, but has indicated it won't immediately retaliate on its own. Critically, President Biden has reportedly told Israel's prime minister that the U.S. would not support an Israeli counterattack on Iran, prioritizing diplomacy and de-escalation for now.
So it seems we're not out of the woods yet, but the initial market reaction appears to be one of relief that the worst-case scenario hasn't materialized so far. U.S. stock futures are actually pointing to a positive open after heavy losses to end last week, although I imagine sentiment could quickly reverse if the situation deteriorates.
Absolutely. Investors will be watching further developments very closely. While an outright war hasn't erupted yet, geopolitical risk in the region is certainly elevated and could continue to drive volatility across markets. Safe havens like gold had initially surged to record highs above $2,400 per ounce before retreating, so the current calm feels fragile and headlines could quickly shift the mood.
Thanks for that update and analysis of the potential market implications related to the tense situation in the Middle East. In other financial news, the Japanese yen has fallen to a fresh 34-year low against the U.S. dollar, dropping to around 153.70 in Tokyo, a level last seen in 1990. Japan's finance minister, Shunichi Suzuki, said the government is closely watching foreign exchange moves and will take all necessary steps in response. For more on this, we're joined by our correspondent. What's behind this sharp decline in the yen's value?
There are a few key factors at play. The main one is the wide interest rate differential between Japan and the United States. Even though the Bank of Japan raised rates in March for the first time in 17 years, rates in Japan are still much lower than in the U.S. This makes the dollar more attractive to investors seeking higher yields. Another factor is the recent spike in tensions in the Middle East following Iran's retaliatory attack on Israel over the weekend. This conflict has sent crude oil prices higher and weighed on stock markets. It's also boosted the appeal of the dollar as a safe haven asset in times of uncertainty.
The yen has already weakened past levels where Japan previously intervened in 2022 to try to slow its decline. Is further intervention on the table?
Finance Minister Suzuki's comments suggest that intervention is definitely a possibility. He said the government will take all necessary steps, which implies they are prepared to intervene in currency markets if they deem it necessary. Japan has a history of intervening to stem rapid declines in the yen's value. However, unilateral intervention can be challenging. If other major central banks are not on board, it's hard for one country to reverse a strong market trend on its own. The Bank of Japan also seems more tolerant of a weaker yen now that it's more confident about reaching its 2% inflation target.
What are the domestic implications of a weaker yen for Japan?
A weak yen is a double-edged sword for Japan's economy. On one hand, it makes Japanese exports more competitive overseas, which can boost profits for exporting companies. But on the other hand, it lifts import costs for a variety of items from energy and raw materials to food. Japan is a resource-scarce country, so it's heavily reliant on imports for many essentials. Higher import costs feed through to higher consumer prices, so a weak yen tends to boost inflation in Japan. For many years, Japan was struggling to generate enough inflation, so a bit more was actually welcome. But now that inflation is over 2%, there's a risk that a weak yen could cause it to overshoot.
Thanks for that insight on the yen's recent moves and potential responses from Japanese authorities. Speaking of which, Japan's Finance Minister Shunichi Suzuki made some comments today about the weakening Japanese yen and how the government plans to respond. For more on this, we turn to our correspondent in Tokyo. What exactly did Minister Suzuki have to say about the yen's recent movements?
Well, David, the finance minister's remarks were rather vague and non-committal. He essentially just said that he wants Japan to be fully prepared regarding the movement in the foreign exchange market, referring to the yen's slide in value recently. But he didn't provide any specifics on what measures they might take.
I see. So no concrete policy proposals then from the finance minister at this stage. Did he express any particular concern about the weaker yen and its potential impact on Japan's economy?
He didn't directly state any major worries, no. The overall tone seemed to be an acknowledgement that the yen has weakened and that the government is monitoring the situation. But you're right that he stopped short of sounding any alarm bells or signaling imminent action to intervene in the currency market.
Currency moves have certainly been a hot topic lately, with the US dollar surging against many other currencies, including the yen. A weaker yen makes Japan's exports more competitive overseas, but also drives up import costs. Is there a sense of how Japanese officials view that trade-off currently?
It's a delicate balance, and different officials have expressed somewhat differing views. The Bank of Japan and some government figures seem willing to tolerate a gradually weaker yen as a way to support the economy and nudge inflation higher. But if the yen slides too rapidly or sharply, that raises concerns about the potential economic fallout. It's a dynamic. Japan's policymakers have grappled with many times over the years.
Thank you for that update from Tokyo. We'll have to see if Minister Suzuki or others in the government have more to say on managing the yen and its impact in the days and weeks ahead, especially if currency market volatility picks up further. Shifting gears now, nuclear energy is experiencing a resurgence in many Western countries as the world grapples with the global energy crisis. At recent climate summits, dozens of nations pledged to significantly increase nuclear power capacity in the coming decades. However, the nuclear industry's revival may be in jeopardy as lenders are reluctant to finance what they perceive as a high-risk sector. Here with more details is our Simply Finance correspondent. So what exactly did countries commit to at these recent summits in terms of expanding nuclear power?
At the COP28 summit in December, 22 countries, including the US, Canada, the UK, and France, pledged to triple nuclear power capacity by 2050 compared to 2020 levels. Then just last month, 34 nations, including major players like the United States, China, France, Britain, and Saudi Arabia, committed to measures to fully unlock the potential of nuclear energy. This includes supporting the extension of existing nuclear reactors, the construction of new plants, and the early deployment of advanced reactors. The world is slowly accepting that limitations with solar and wind energy mean they can't fully replace fossil fuels at a large scale, at least not fast enough to meet climate goals. the war in Ukraine has also exposed Europe's reliance on Russian energy. So nuclear is being seen as a key piece of the clean energy puzzle.
But despite this renewed interest from governments, it sounds like financing could be a major obstacle. What happened at the recent nuclear summit convened by the International Atomic Energy Agency?
Yes, that's right. The IAEA estimates the global nuclear industry needs around $5 trillion in investment through 2050. But at their first ever nuclear summit in Brussels last month, international lenders appeared very reluctant to finance nuclear projects. Former U.S. Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz said if the bankers are uniformly pessimistic, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Officials from the European Investment Bank, the European Bank of Reconstruction and Development, and the Development Bank of Latin America all indicated that nuclear is a lower priority compared to renewables and energy efficiency. They cited the very high project risks that have been seen with nuclear.
It certainly seems like a challenging situation if the industry can't secure the necessary financing despite support from governments. Do you think this could derail the nuclear renaissance that appeared to be taking shape?
It's a significant hurdle, no doubt about that. Nuclear projects are extremely capital intensive and have long timelines. Without buy-in from the financial sector, it will be very difficult to execute on the ambitious nuclear expansion goals recently put forth by countries. Governments may need to get more directly involved with funding and risk sharing to instill confidence in lenders. Streamlining permitting and approval processes could also help lower risks and attract more private investment. But as it stands now, the lack of enthusiasm from banks definitely puts a damper on the nuclear revival. Overcoming this financing challenge will be critical if nuclear is to play a major role in the clean energy transition.
Thanks for that insight and analysis. Clearly, the path forward for the nuclear industry is a complicated one that we'll continue to monitor. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Finance. We'll see you back here tomorrow.